Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. Today's discussion is going to revolve around protein synthesis. Let's start by taking a look at this diagram to the lower right. It's actually a drawing by an artist of what a cell might look like. However, this is a fake cell, and no cell in the human body can possibly look like that. You'll understand why when we study the cell structure and function in detail. Inside of the cell are a whole bunch of goodies floating around in a watery goop. Those goodies really aren't called goodies, they're called cellular organelles. Each has a special name and function that we'll study in detail. We mentioned those goodies already when we studied the cell cycle. If you recall, there was a gap 1 and a gap 2 phase. Those G phases are where we made the goodies. So what do they do? Well, the majority of those goodies, for the majority of their daily lives, they create protein. Protein synthesis is a large part of what our cellular machinery does, and it determines many characteristics of cells, including both structure and function. And we discussed many of those functions during the chemistry portion of this course. So let's take a look at another figure. I love this figure from your textbook. It's one of those big picture kind of things. I hope you come back to this at the very end of your studies and use it as a summary. Maybe you can review all the things that you've learned about protein synthesis. Better yet, maybe you can use this slide and this slide alone to teach yourself or someone else out loud all about protein synthesis. If you looked at my studying tips and tricks that I have posted on Angel, you'll see one of them is try to teach yourself the lesson of the day. If you can, that demonstrates the highest level of learning, because to be able to teach somebody a lesson, you really have to know and understand what's in that lesson. So try that. If you have no one at home, teach yourself in the mirror. Let's outline what's on this slide. First of all, my arrow is tracing over this green and gray structure. This is the cell membrane. Remember, this is our phospholipid bilayer. It's our fat sandwich, so to speak. The yellow stuff is supposed to represent the cytoplasm that contains a watery goop with all the goodies called organelles. And then, of course, how can we not notice this large pinkish tan round structure? That's the nucleus. That of course contains our genetic material. Notice there's holes in the nuclear envelope. Those are called nuclear pores, and they are very important to let stuff in and out of the nucleus. So what are the two steps of protein synthesis? The first step, boom, yep, that was advanced PowerPoint. Don't try that at home. You might trip over yourself and get hurt. The first step is called transcription, and it is what it says it is. Transcription means to copy something, like a transcriptionist copies stuff. So in transcription, we are going to copy the genetic code that's in this DNA double helix into this red structure called messenger RNA. And messenger RNA is then going to carry a copy of that genetic code. It's going to carry it through one of these nuclear pores, take it out into the cytoplasm, where step 2 occurs. Boom, there it is, called translation. And translation is what it says it is. If you translate languages, you change one language into another, and that's exactly what's going to happen here. In translation, the copy that we have of the genetic code in messenger RNA is going to be changed or translated into this green structure called a protein. And that's the short story. Always start there with the big picture, and then you can work on the details and come back to this slide and put it all together. So let's dive into the details. The first step of protein synthesis, as we said, is transcription. Remember the definition. It means copying the genetic code in DNA into messenger RNA. Write that down. Where does it occur? Well, you already know. It takes place in the nucleus, as demonstrated on the prior figure. We have to get some more information, some basic definitions, to be able to understand this process. It turns out that DNA and RNA store genetic information as sets of three nucleotides. And for DNA, it is called a base triplet. During the process of protein synthesis, we'll see that DNA is going to be temporarily separated, and one side of the DNA is going to act as a pattern or a template for production of messenger RNA, which is abbreviated mRNA, and of course this is again taking place in the nucleus. New nucleotides from the cytoplasm are going to get into the nucleus through the nuclear pores. Then, each DNA base triplet is going to be transcribed or copied as a complementary sequence of three nucleotides in messenger RNA called a codon with a red star. I love these names. Messenger RNA is carrying the message. It's carrying a copy of the genetic code, and it's carrying them in these three nucleotide little sequences called codons. So it carries the code in codons. Love the words. So in summary, copying DNA to RNA is called transcription. Remember, however, from our prior chemistry studies when we did nucleotides, uracil replaces thymine in RNA. No better way to demonstrate and learn and understand this than by example. So if we have CAT as the base triplet in the DNA template, that does not stand for a cat. CAT stands for cytosine, adenine, and thymine. But what does that code for in the messenger RNA's codon? It codes for GUA, which is guanine, uracil, and adenine. How do you remember this? It goes back to the mnemonic devices we did during the nucleotide section of our chemistry lectures. Remember in DNA, we had ATGC, which stood for at Gulf Coast. But the base pairings and the bases themselves were different in RNA. It was AUGC, which stood for adenine, uracil, guanine, cytosine. And my mnemonic was Auburn University, Gulf Coast, as painful as that is for me to say as a Tide fan. Some of you might be wondering, well, how's all this happen? I mean, how does the body know? It's almost a miracle that we do all this stuff almost always correctly, in the right order, at the right time, and so forth. What dictates, what facilitates the process? And the answer, again, is enzymes. Remember, enzymes are the things, are the proteins that regulate almost every metabolic process in the human body. Never forget it. What happens next? Well, the messenger RNA, with its message, with its copy of the genetic code, carried in codons, enters the cytoplasm and binds to a structure there, an organelle called a ribosome, with a star. What is a ribosome? We'll learn more about it later, but for now, here are the essentials. A ribosome is the site of protein synthesis inside of the cell's cytoplasm. How did it get its name? Some root word means body. So it's a little body or a little nugget. Yeah, they're like tiny little nuggets inside the cytoplasm. And ribo really stands for ribonucleic acid, or RNA. And sure enough, ribosomes are composed mostly of RNA. So they're little nuggets of RNA where protein synthesis takes place. Here's a figure from your textbook, shows a brief overview of transcription. Here's our double helix in purple, that's our DNA. Here shown in yellow is an enzyme, don't worry about its name, but it's facilitating this process. It's separating the DNA. It's allowing us to use one side as a template so that the base triplets are copied into messenger RNA as a series of three nucleotides called codons. A little bit more detail here. First of all, when we initially make the messenger RNA, it's called pre-mRNA. I guess that's important to know because it'll help you understand stuff later on down the road. Let's move on to the next slide, which has a little bit more detail. Remember, what we have here are some of the same basic players, but they're just magnified a lot bigger now, so there's more detail. It's also more colorful and pretty. Up top here, this is representing the nucleus. Down here at the bottom, that's representing the cytoplasm. Remember, transcription itself is taking place in the nucleus. So let's do another overview using this slide. Here we have, blown up bigger, the double helix. Here is DNA in purple. Here's the enzyme, don't worry about the name, but this enzyme in yellow is facilitating the process. It's separating the strands. This strand here is being used as the template. Here is the genetic code in DNA called a base triplet, and now the enzyme is helping it be copied into mRNA as a series of three nucleotides that we now call a codon. And we do this over and over again, and we make a big, long, red string of messenger RNA, initially called pre-mRNA, the whole process, again, facilitated by enzymes. It will undergo some slicing and dicing that we'll talk about, some massaging and some manipulation. Eventually, it'll be the final product, which is called functional mRNA, or most people just call mRNA. And then that red tape, that mRNA, will exit the nuclear envelope through a nuclear pore. It will enter the cytoplasm and find and bind to a ribosome, the site of protein synthesis. So I guess this is a cool little slide to also try to tell yourself a story on. Just for fun, look up here at the name of this enzyme. They're really not big mysteries. If you go in more in depth in this stuff later on in life, enzymes almost always end in the last three letters, ASE, and then the rest of the name tells you what it does. So RNA polymerase is an enzyme that makes a big string of RNA. So the name of an enzyme does exactly what it tells you it does. We're ready to move on to the second step of protein synthesis, which is called translation. The definition you already know. It's changing the genetic code, which is now in messenger RNA as codons, and we're going to change that genetic code in the codons into a protein. So that's what translation is. You know where it takes place. It takes place in the cytoplasm. More definitions coming up. Unfortunately, there are several types of RNA. I must introduce another one to you now. A very important kind of RNA called transfer RNA, or tRNA. I love the name because it kind of tells you what it's going to do. It's going to transfer or carry stuff. let's break it down. Transfer RNA. At one end, it has a three nucleotide sequence of RNA called an anticodon with a red star. Circle that or highlight it. It's key. The opposite end of the tRNA has the ability to bind to a specific, notice specific, amino acid and then carry it to the ribosome. That's the site of protein synthesis. Remember the big picture? Let's summarize. We just copied the genetic code into messenger RNA. The messenger RNA came into the cytoplasm with its code, with its codons, and bound to a ribosome. And now, in order to translate the code, we're going to bring in tRNA, which is going to transfer amino acids to the site of protein synthesis, which is the ribosome. And the tRNA and the mRNA are going to get together. They're going to pair up. They're going to match up. How are they going to do it? With our old friends' complementary bases. The anticodon on the tRNA is going to attach to the codon on the mRNA. That's not too hard to remember. Anticodon binds to codon like lock and key. Example, because you might be asked examples in testing situations. Let's say the anticodon, remember we're talking RNA here, is AUG. What's the codon going to be that it's going to pair with? Well, it's going to be UAC, because you'll never forget our mnemonic of the complementary base pairs in RNA. It's AUGC, Auburn University, Gulf Coast. You'll never miss it. So what happens? Time after time again, transfer RNA is going to keep carrying in its amino acids. It's going to keep matching anticodon with codon. It's going to keep lining up amino acids like a big string. Bonds are going to form between the amino acids that you know are called peptide bonds, and we're going to eventually, in the end of the deal, make a protein. In summary, translation refers to translating messenger RNA's code or message into an amino acid sequence in a protein. I have a great visual, or a whole bunch of visuals, on the next slide coming up, including individual kind of still shot slides, as well as a video which will walk you through and really help you learn this stuff. Let's start with this slide. First, a summary. Remember, the first step we did was transcription, where we copied the genetic code from DNA into messenger RNA. Here's mRNA, this red tape, and we brought the red tape out of the nucleus through a pore, and that tape bound to a ribosome, shown here in purple. It's actually only half the ribosome, called the small subunit, and it binds to that small ribosomal unit, and while it's there, in comes the transfer RNA, shown here in blue. Remember, there's sort of two ends to tRNA. Yeah, tRNA has two ends with a T. On one end, it has the anticodon that matches up with the complementary base pairs on the codon. On the other end of tRNA, we have the amino acids. After all, our whole job here is building a protein out of amino acids. How does it all start? Well, on messenger RNA, it all starts with something called, wait a minute, this is really complicated, it's called the start codon. I think you should know the start codon. This is sometimes seen in future testing situations. The start codon is always AUG. How are you going to remember that? Well, one way is a little mnemonic: always understand genetics. So, AUG is always the start codon. It binds with the anticodon on transfer RNA, which is carrying the first amino acid, shown here as this little green ball. What happens next? Next, the large subunit of the ribosome, which is shown here in a pink or tan color, binds to the small subunit. Once you have the large and small subunits of the ribosome joined together, the ribosome is now functional. It can now actually do its job. So what happens next? The initial tRNA, which is called initiator tRNA, lines itself up, lodges itself in this part of the ribosome called the P site. Now, I won't tell you what the P really stands for because it's too complicated for your course. I just remember it as the primary site. Yeah, the P site is the primary site because that's where we get things started. Next, another transfer RNA comes in with another amino acid, shown here as a little red ball. On the other end, of course, of the tRNA, we have the anticodon. That anticodon comes in to find its matching codon on messenger RNA. You know, anticodon matches with codon. It's AUGC. That second molecule of tRNA lodges itself into a site on the ribosome called the A site. I won't tell you what the A really stands for because it's too complicated for this course. Here's how my P brain thinks of it. I think of the A site like the addition site, because the A site is where we're going to keep on adding more amino acids. So remember it easy. The P site is the primary site where we initiate and start the whole thing. The A site is where we add amino acids. Let's take a look at what happens next. Once we have the initiator tRNA in the primary site and the next transfer RNA in the addition site, we form a peptide bond between the amino acids. So the green and the red amino acids bind together with a peptide bond. Well, at this point in time, at the end of this single step that we did, we just have two amino acids together. We certainly haven't formed a protein. All we have formed technically is a dipeptide. So we have to have a way to repeat this process over and over and over again to string a whole bunch of amino acids together to create a protein. What happens next? Take a look at this picture. There's a lot in this picture. Here's our messenger RNA with its series of three nucleotides called codons. Here's our fully functional ribosome. Here is the initiator transfer RNA. Look what it does. It gets out and it leaves. And then the ribosome shifts. It moves along the mRNA tape, if you will. When it shifts by one codon. And when it shifts by one codon, this transfer RNA, which has the two amino acids on it, gets shifted into the P site, leaving the A site open. Remember, the A site is the addition site, and that's what we want to do. We want to keep on repetitively shifting the ribosome by one codon at a time along the strand of mRNA, so we keep opening up the A site. That's the addition site. So what happens? Transfer RNAs keep coming in one after another by repeating this process over and over again. They keep coming into the A site where we keep adding amino acids by peptide bonds. And eventually, as you see in the diagram below, we string together so many amino acids that we eventually form a protein. One way I think about this for some reason, and I guess it's old school, you might have to internet search this one. There used to be something called a label maker. So for some reason, this ribosome cranking along the messenger RNA and then eventually churning out the protein strand just reminds me of those old label makers. But that's probably just me and maybe one other person listening to this. How's it all end? Well, wait for it. It ain't rocket science. When we hit a stop codon, and don't memorize what this is, but eventually you hit a stop codon and it tells the whole process to stop and the protein is finally finished. This slide here looks rather busy, and it is. It's a summary of everything we talked about all in one place, shows you the whole cycle. I realize this figure may help some of you, and in which case you should use it, and for others of you, it may seem too sort of busy for your brain, like my brain. And in that case, you can just crumple it up and throw it out because there's nothing new on here. So use it if it helps, otherwise, don't worry about it. This slide is one of those great interactions animations from your textbook, and I hope you all look at it. It works you through step by step in these videos and reviews all the processes in great detail that we just looked at. I really think these video animations will help you put it all together, and then hopefully you'll be able to tell yourself the story of protein synthesis in your own mind, so that if I or anyone in the future asks you about it, you'll be able to find your place in the story and answer the question. Finally, to finish this unit, I must show you another of my favorite topics. So we're going to do just one more little bit on DNA and proteins. Check this slide out. We already mentioned that the average gene has about 3,000 nucleotides. So how can 30,000 genes make a million or more different proteins? A couple bullet points on here. When the Human Genome Project was going on, they thought they were going to find many more genes. They thought there was going to be like 100,000 genes, but it turned out it was closer to 30,000. And also we found out that those 30,000 genes could make a million or more different proteins. How is that possible? Well, one answer is up here in my little clip art I threw up of an old reel of movie film, because the words I want you to write down are alternative splicing. Do you know what splicing is? In the old days, we had a movie camera and we actually had tape. And I don't know if they still do this in Hollywood or not, but you can take this big reel of tape, you can unwind the whole thing, you could chop it up into as many pieces of many different sizes, as many as you want, and then you could essentially tape it back together and make many different visuals from one roll of tape just by slicing and dicing and reconnecting the tape a million different ways. And that's exactly how 30,000 genes, or that's one of the ways how 30,000 genes can code for a million or more different proteins. A lot of it has to do with that slide I went over when I said we went from pre-mRNA to functional mRNA. Remember, in the nucleus, I said there's some slicing and dicing and massaging. Well, some of that, the real term for that was alternative splicing. And that's one of the ways that allows 30,000 genes to create a million or more proteins. Sounds almost like a miracle, doesn't it? Well, that's all I had on this unit. Next time we get together, it's going to be cellular respiration.